You are listening to the Tuesday, October 10th edition of RotoViz Radio, brought to you by MyBookie. I'm Pat Corain on Twitter, at Pat Corain. And with me is Sean Siegel on Twitter, at FF underscore Contrarian. Sean, great to have you on the show.
It's going to be an exciting one tonight. We have one of my favorites in Ryan McDowell joining us a little bit later to talk about how to structure your fantasy league, give us some ideas about some of the coolest leagues that are out there, talk about this week's results, and then also cover a few developmental players, look at some of the highlights in college football that might affect how you make those all-important future trades. So, very excited for the show.
Yeah, it's great to have Ryan on and get kind of that dynasty angle. We talk a lot of dynasty on this show. We get into the rookie class and all of that in the off season. But, you know, since the season started, we've really been kind of diving into the football each week, really kind of having more of a redraft bent to the show. And it was cool just to get Ryan's thoughts on some of the stuff long term, some of the stuff we saw Sunday, the big developments with running backs, getting bigger workloads than expected, breaking out. It was cool to get Ryan's kind of long-term view on that, dynasty trade advice on some of those guys. And then, yeah, get into some of the college prospects, which I'm not, I don't watch a ton of college football, not the hugest fan of college football, but I then kind of do my deep dive every January, February, and kind of play catch up. But it was cool to see, you know, Ryan's take on this class as it stands right now. So a lot of really great stuff there. And definitely check that out. But yeah, kind of just wanted to get some of your thoughts on the week, Sean. How did the week go for you, and what jumped out to you on Sunday?
Well, it was an exciting week again, I think, for the fantasy teams, and it was an odd week. As a fan first, it was a little disappointing to see the Arizona Cardinals look so bad again. And then also, man, my Detroit Lions, they're having a good season in a lot of ways. They're 3-2. They have a positive point differential. But what they're doing on offense continues to be just so frustrating. Matthew Stafford now has fallen to, if you look at points per game, and this brings in some players who probably are a little bit less relevant, but he's dropped to QB 20 and hasn't broken 20 points since the first week. And the entire structure of what they're doing seemingly doesn't make a lot of sense. They're in the middle of the pack in rushing attempts. And a week ago, they got what looked to be a little bit of a breakout game from Amir Abdullah. And so even though he's someone I've suggested you not own for your fantasy teams, that was exciting. Abdullah has some impressive athleticism, and occasionally he's able to display that, but it just still doesn't really work that well within this offense. So they're middle of the pack in attempts, but they're eighth worst in terms of rushing fantasy points over expectation on a per game basis. So they continue to run the ball, even though they're very ineffective with it. And it's starting to be a little bit of a concern, their passing game overall, that through three quarters, they really struggle with it. They're 3-2, so you could say the game flow has mostly been in their favor, but in a lot of these situations, it hasn't necessarily, and it's only in the desperation moments that they seem to be interested in unleashing Matthew Stafford. He is the guy on their offense. They've got Golden Tate, they've got Marvin Jones, obviously they have Eric Ebron, who is struggling through a nightmarish season, and then they have Abdullah. But the guy is Matthew Stafford, and so if you're not going to let him try and win the game for you, then that's frustrating. It can't only be in catch-up mode. But then also, Golden Tate and Marvin Jones, they're not getting open. They're not allowing the Lions to control the game in the passing game. And we saw that again against Carolina, where it was only when they started throwing to the backup tight end and the fifth-string wide receiver that they were really able to have any effectiveness. So both as a Lions fan and as a dynasty owner, really hoping that Kenny Galladay can come back sooner rather than later.
Yeah. I just want to give a Scott Pianowski tweet a shout out here. I saw this on Sunday as I was trying to figure out what the heck was happening with Eric Ebron. Tweeted out, "You should drop Eric Ebron like he's a pass intended for Eric Ebron," which I think sums the situation up pretty well. I didn't really get a chance to watch much of this game in particular, and I was just sort of confused, like, what was going on that Darren Fells was getting, you know, two touchdowns, I guess just two targets, 24 yards. Was it just kind of a random thing that, or was he actually playing over Ebron?
Well, he's definitely gotten more playing time. He had more playing time against the Vikings than he has been. They've been rotating those players, and they've still been throwing the ball to Ebron, trying to get him involved. He's such a big-time athlete, and they don't exactly have that on their team or on their team in the important positions. They have Golden Tate, who, for an underneath receiver, is very athletic, but he's not someone who has this combination of size and speed that really changes the game or makes the defense account for him. Obviously, they've got athleticism with Abdullah, but he's so small and the blocking is so poor that they're not really able to make that work. You look at someone like we mentioned last week, Aaron Jones, who we're going to talk about quite a bit later on the show, but is very similar. And then you see in a game with the Green Bay Packers that, okay, within that offense, you know, that kind of running back can be successful. And then I think there's just an argument that Jones is actually a much better player than Abdullah. But even if you don't believe that, it's just a very difficult situation with what they're trying to do offensively. And they need somebody to make some plays before they're at the end of the fourth quarter. I mean, they almost came back against the Falcons and, you know, if probably did and got the game stolen by the officials. They almost came back against the Panthers, but they're getting controlled in these games. And for a team that has Matthew Stafford, that has a defense that has been a real breakout sort of defense, performed much better than was expected, or at least they did until this weekend where the Panthers and Cam Newton owned them. You just want them to do more offensively. And Galladay is really that guy. I mean, I know that he has been a trendy player. We wrote a bunch about him on RotoViz at the beginning of the offseason, encouraged our readers to pick him up. Obviously, then many other people were also on board with him. You know, he had this tremendous combine, then excellent training camp. Then he has this huge first game before the hamstring injury has sidelined him. So when you're talking about one game for a player, even Stephen Hill, who will go down in RotoViz history as one of the biggest busts. Our official RotoViz Dynasty League, the two divisions are named after Hill and Marvin McNutt. So those are kind of our two guys there.
I think we should start a third one for Bishop Sankey.
Yes. Well, if we can bring in some more players, extend the league, have a second conference. We need to have the two conferences there. Right. And Sankey would definitely be the first division when we do our expansion draft. Yeah, so even Hill had this huge first game before. You know, I'd like to think that just he was good, and then the injuries caused him to not be successful, although in some ways, obviously, for him, that would be even more disappointing. But with Galladay, we have a lot of potential, we have a lot of excitement, and the offense just desperately needs what he brings to the table. So hopefully he'll be back, and if you have Matthew Stafford as your quarterback and you've suffered through these last four games, hopefully when he does come back, he will have an impact. And Ebron, I just feel so bad for him because he's obviously struggling similarly to Amari Cooper, but you know, without 2 years of production to go back on. He actually had a touchdown in this game, but the ball went through a defender's hands right before it got to him. So in that circumstance, you'd still love to see the player make the great play, but it almost seems like fate is even conspiring against him now, where he's made to look bad because on this play where he has a touchdown, it's actually a much more difficult play than it probably looks like in some ways. So that was unfortunate, and the Lions' loss was unfortunate for their fans. But the flip side of that, obviously, is that if you're a Cam Newton owner, if you're a Devin Funchess owner, that game was very exciting.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned Galladay coming back soon, and you know, thinking that he could be what they need. You know, maybe people have kind of forgotten about him a little bit. He had that big first game. He was that kind of trendy pick, but Is he someone that you'd be trying to maybe steal away from owners, doing something like a 2-for-2 with Galladay as kind of the primary target, basically looking like maybe a throw in, a sweetener, that type of thing? You know, you're getting Galladay and a player back, maybe for one player on your end, something like that. What kind of offers would you be trying to throw out for Galladay right now?
Well, I think certainly in Dynasty, if you can involve him in sort of a 2-for-trade, anytime you're doing 1-for-1, I think that's just always very difficult to come up with the right value. But if you can bring him in as the second player involved, this is certainly the perfect time. He was dropped in several of my NFFC leagues last week, and that's a 20 roster spot format. So you can carry a pretty decent number of players in that format. So I'm guessing that in most formats that tend to be 16 roster spot or 18 roster spot, that he either is available now or after another week of not playing, he will probably be available. Although at a certain point, you're starting to hope that he comes back and maybe people will start picking him up again. I think if you're an enthusiast, and the people who tend to be on the Galladay hype train are definitely enthusiasts, myself included, I think what you're hoping for is this Will Fuller type of explosion, where, you know, Fuller is someone we wrote about a lot on RotoViz as not just someone who actually deserved to be drafted in the first round, which he was, and in some ways looked at as a reach there, but very possibly the best wide receiver in that class. Now, it's a very weak class, and Corey Coleman has been hurt by multiple injuries and then obviously poor and dispiriting quarterback play when he is healthy. I think those are sort of the two main guys. But Will Fuller had great numbers, great age-adjusted numbers to go with athleticism that I think tends to be overlooked. You know, he has some drops, and drops do matter. I mean, you look at where Ebron is, you know, he's almost playing pass defense on himself. You look at, obviously we've discussed Amari Cooper at length, and those drops, not only do they affect where the quarterback starts to look on plays, but they affect the receiver himself. And that can't help but hurt you as you go and try to perform in what's a very difficult and competitive environment. At the same time, they can be overrated. I think for someone like Will Fuller, they are overrated. You know, you saw in this game against the Chiefs where, to a certain extent, some of these touchdowns that Deshaun Watson has gotten have been lucky. And certainly some of the plays that Will Fuller has made are not the kinds of plays you can count on every week. But that is what Will Fuller brings to the table, is someone who can get deep and who can score a touchdown at any moment. And in that game against the Chiefs, you saw the opposite of what the narrative is for him, where he made some very difficult grabs. And so if you can add some of those plays in there as well, I think it definitely mitigates the concerns about drops almost completely. Bringing it back around to the idea of Galladay, you have someone, again, who I think can make those plays. Now, whether or not he will at the NFL level beyond that first game, whether the offense will allow him to do it if Matthew Stafford takes those shots deep, but I think there's that potential. And certainly, you know, Golden Tate and Marvin Jones are not the players who are going to take a Matthew Stafford and get him up to that top level. They're not the kinds of players who are going to take the Detroit Lions to the Super Bowl. So if there's sort of a dream or magical scenario for that team and for the specific players in the offense, I think it does have to be Galladay who makes that all come to fruition.
Cool. All right, well, let's leave it there for now. I want to get to our interview with Ryan McDowell of Dynasty League Football and RotoWorld, who you can follow on Twitter at RyanMC23. And we're going to get to that interview as soon as I remind you that you can get a listener's only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL Pass through the RotoViz NFL Podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. That subscription gives you unlimited access to all of our premium NFL content, and it also helps support the podcast. Also, you can help support the pod by subscribing to and rating the RotoViz Radio channel on iTunes. And in case you missed that last week, we now have a RotoViz football show feed on iTunes. So if you just want to subscribe to this show and a kind of smaller handful of shows, you can do that via the RotoViz football feed on iTunes. And ratings and reviews really help there, since we're trying to launch the individual feeds for each of the shows. Each of the shows are going to have their own individual feeds in addition to the kind of main channel feed that you probably subscribe to currently. So definitely, if you got a free moment, help us out. Pop on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Let's get to our interview with Ryan McDowell.
Fantasy football fans, listen up. If you love fantasy football, then you need to try my new favorite app, Draft. Here's how it works. You do a draft that lasts for just 1 week, and there's no management. Just set it and forget it. Once you're done drafting, that's it. No trades, no waiver wire. Draft even takes care of last-minute injuries for you. Drafts start every couple minutes, so you could join one right now. And the best part? You play for cold, hard cash. Drafts start from just $1, so there's a draft for everyone. There's no salary caps, so you play in real-life snake drafts, just like you would with your friends in a season-long league. So come in, join me, draft against me on Draft today. Download the app anytime. Just search Draft in your app store and join a game in minutes, or play right from your computer on playdraft.com, whatever you want. For a limited time only, all new players get a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit. But you have to use the promo code RVRadio. That's right. Play a real money game for free just for using my promo code RVRadio on your first deposit on Draft. Just search Draft in the App Store or go to playdraft.com and come play free with promo code RVRadio.
Please welcome to the show Ryan McDowell, a senior writer for Dynasty League Football and a contributor to RotoWorld. You can follow him on Twitter at RyanMC23. Ryan, thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Sean. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
We're excited to have you, Ryan. You're famous in the fantasy community for the number and the complexity of leagues that you run. I don't think it would be out of line for me to call you the top commissioner in fantasy football. Maybe there's some others out there. Hopefully we'll hear from some other people who have some great leagues they do. But this year, I've had the chance to play in Kitchen Cinco, which is the first season of the fifth Kitchen Sink League, if I understand correctly. And this format has everything. It has super flex, it has tight end premium, it had an auction startup for veteran players, then an auction for rookies, then an auction for developmental players. Owners have to assign contracts of 1 to 4 years for veterans. You have a taxi squad, devy slots. Then in the off season, owners are allowed to designate players with a franchise tag, transition tag, restricted free agent tags. And in order for somebody else to get those RFAs away, they have to use all-purpose funds, which go to a variety of things, including the free agent bidding and future draft picks. Moreover, all of these things are tradable, which makes the trade landscape just absolutely crazy. And Ryan was awesome when he invited me. He actually, we had a phone call, and he went through the rules with me for 20, 30 minutes, which means I attempt to violate them only once or twice a week instead of just constantly. Ryan, what's your favorite element of these leagues, and what would you recommend other commissioners adopt?
Wow, I think trying to pick my favorite aspect of the Kitchen Sink Leagues might be like trying to pick my favorite child of my three. But for me, it's probably just the auction format in general that has become a favorite of mine. I actually try not to really even participate in any more startup dynasty drafts. I just strongly prefer the auction, and then specifically the format of the Kitchen Sink Leagues with multiple auctions throughout the off season. There's always something happening from February through August in these leagues. There's nearly an auction every month, so that just keeps the activity up. I think all the participants in the five leagues really enjoy that aspect of it. So that would probably be my go-to and my suggestion for other commissioners. Of course, it would be difficult and maybe even impossible to turn an existing league into an auction league. But if you're considering starting a new league, I would certainly go the route of the auction.
And I think those auctions are a lot of fun. You and I ended up with quite a bit of money toward the end of our rookie auction, and I ended up spending about the same amount on Aaron Jones that the owner who managed to come down with Kareem Hunt spent on him. Now, that doesn't look quite as bad this week as it's looked leading up to it, but managing those funds in those auctions is a pretty big deal. Do you have any recommendations for owners who are trying to balance that or prepare for that in their rookie auctions?
Yeah, it's difficult, and I think that's part of the challenge that every auction I've participated in, and you named them earlier, but rookie auctions, Devy auctions, free agent, and of course the startup auctions over the five seasons of Kitchen Sink Leagues, you can see trends and things like that, but in general, they're all very different as far as team building strategy that the different owners are implementing and things like that. If I had to pick out one thing that is true across all the different auctions and the five Kitchen Sink Leagues, I would say the earlier you can get in on a player, the better. So if there's a player you really want to target, I would just go ahead and throw him up for a nomination on the first day, put your bid out there. And a lot of times, like in your example with Hunt and Jones, it may look like a value by the end of the auction.
Well, let's talk about Jones a little bit more, actually. One of the things I think that jumped out the most from Sunday was just how good Aaron Jones looked in that role and how big his role was on Sunday, not really sharing time so much with Jamal Williams. It's just kind of having Jamal Williams backing him up. But Marlon Mack, another rookie, also looked really great on Sunday as well. Scoring and just looking pretty quick. So who were you more impressed with, Ryan? And do you think that one or both of these guys has a chance to wrestle away the starting job for the rest of the season? And kind of curious what you think about them, both in redraft and dynasty.
Sure. I thought obviously both were really impressive this week. And Jones got a lot of the attention. I think he's currently the running back three on the week. So obviously a big time performance from him, and it will be interesting to see how that backfield looks going forward, whether it's some type of committee attack, which I think is probably most likely at this point, or if they just return to Montgomery. But for me, Mack was actually the more impressive of the two. I think he only had 9 or 10 touches on the day, a couple of long runs, one touchdown, and almost had a second one. So he just he looks so much more explosive than Frank Gore, which is no surprise at this point. And Gore's had obviously a great career, but at this point they have to give Mack more touches. I think both of those guys, in both Mack and Jones, at this point are closing in on being worth a first round pick in dynasty leagues. I don't know that I'm ready to pay that for them in a trade, but certainly a second rounder wouldn't get it done. So there are a couple of the players who at this point are probably worth more than a second round pick, but less than a first.
I think in dynasty, the Mac Jones gap I think is a little bigger because in favor of Mac, because you've got such a clear opening there for the lead role. But of course, I think if Montgomery, or rather if Jones was able to replace Montgomery as the true lead back in Green Bay, there'd potentially be even more upside for him in that role than even Mac would have, being the running back for Andrew Luck going forward, assuming that they don't start to incorporate Mac in a true bell cow role. Do you agree with that? Do you see Mac's opportunity as a little bit more juicy in Dynasty? Would he be your preference in Dynasty beyond just kind of what we saw this week?
Yeah, I think so. He had, I guess, kind of a more established Dynasty value coming in into the season and throughout the offseason, throughout the draft process, etc. So, and I certainly like the opportunity there. Gore is nearing the end, and I think it's not a stretch to say that the Colts are going to continue to struggle this year. At some point, I expect them to give the majority of the touches to Mac, just to kind of find out what they have as they continue to build that roster. So I do think he has that clear path, and I think by the end of the season, he'll be the one of the two with more value. But both of those guys are just good reminders of why it's why it can be really profitable to load up on second and third round rookie picks.
Ryan, we had a number of very interesting developments with different running back committees this weekend. I was looking at our screener, and for the season, on 37 attempts, Alex Collins has created 9 fantasy points over expectation. By contrast, Thomas Rawls and Eddie Lacy together are just shy of 10 points below expectation on 38 attempts. Now, we talk a lot about how difficult running back evaluation is, and it's notoriously difficult even for coaches when they have players in practice and get to see them every day. So some of it is just a matter of this position outside of those guys at the very edges. It's very difficult to evaluate. When you look at those players, do you think the results from this first month, do they tell us more about Collins, more about the Seattle running game, or are these merely the types of fluctuations you would expect to see in a small sample?
I would say it probably tells us the most about the Seattle running game. We all know that that offensive line is in shambles. I think they lost another one of their linemen today or this past weekend with an injury. So it's only going to get worse. Looking at that backfield, excuse me, prior to the season of Rawls, Lacy, and Procise, all three of those guys are players who have had injury trouble recently. And I was kind of on record saying I didn't want any of them. I was certainly intrigued by Chris Carson, but unfortunately he was another one who went down with an injury. So overall, that's just a situation I'm avoiding. And Collins has looked good for Baltimore overall, but again, not a player I'm overly excited about.
I want to move to another running back committee. This one being a bit of a surprise this week that it was a committee, the 49ers with Carlos Hyde and Matt Breida. Hyde had been getting a lot of the work. He's banged up, but you know, this week, maybe because he's banged up or maybe something more, it was really a split between Hyde and Breida. Offseason reports suggested Hyde was on the outs in San Francisco. There was also a weekend report claiming an extension might be in the works. So things have been kind of all over the map with where Hyde stands as a 49er. And then Sunday obviously made that picture even more confusing. So how are you viewing the situation with Hyde and Breida in San Francisco?
I guess this weekend's game just made me think back to the entire offseason when we heard reports that the new 49ers coaching staff would not be necessarily interested in retaining Hyde. There were even rumors at one point that they would cut or trade him. So in that aspect, this is not really a surprise. But for a team like that, that has so few offensive weapons, Hyde started the season strongly. He had 3 top 20 fantasy performances in the first 3 weeks. Obviously, the injury slowed him down a little bit over the past 2 weeks. But I'm really surprised to see them moving away from them, away from him, and being so vocal about it. That's one thing we don't see and hear from a lot of coaches. But for Shanahan to admit that the decision on Sunday was not necessarily related to the injury, but more of the hot hand situation, and then to come out today and say that would continue with basically with a timeshare is not the honesty we always get from head coaches. And it actually kind of makes me wonder if Shanahan is being honest. Maybe this is a good buy low opportunity for Carlos Hyde this week.
And so when you say a buy low this week, you're looking at Hyde as someone you want back, or you're looking to try and capitalize off of Breida lower than he'll get if we have one more week of this?
Yeah, I'm referring to Hyde. Again, he started the season with 3 top 20 games. He's probably safe to say he's playing as well as he has at any stretch of his career. Unfortunately, that has been cut short almost every season by injury. So this three or four game stretch of impressive fantasy performances is actually pretty rare for him. And if he does get out of San Francisco following this season, I think there will be some demand to sign him. So yeah, with this kind of bad news, quote unquote bad news for Hyde and Breda coming up and earning a larger share, I think Hyde would be a player I target over the next few days in trade talks.
All right. Well, in Kitchen Sink, I, at one point or another this offseason, owned all of the other 49ers. So I've made a pretty strong bet against Hyde, and things started to come to fruition a little bit this weekend. We'll see if that continues to develop. I certainly agree that he's going to be someone who will be highly in demand regardless of how things go. Speaking of Hyde there, we're going to have more with Ryan in just a second, but right now I think Pat has an announcement for us on who won the much coveted RotoViz pullover.
Yep, that's right. So this has been a giveaway contest that we had with MyBookie. If you went on MyBookie, signed up at mybookie.ag, and then forwarded us a copy of your confirmation using the code ROTORADIO, then you got a chance to win a RotoViz athletic pullover. Mine has arrived, the pretty sharp gray with the red logo. So we went ahead and did the drawing. And so the winner of the MyBookie RotoViz Sports Pullover is Steve Lowe. So Steve, get in touch with the show, rotovizradio@gmail.com. You can also contact us on Twitter at rotovizradio. And if you didn't win the pullover, you can still sign up for MyBookie and get 100% deposit bonus with the code RotoRadio. MyBookie will also add a $25 casino chip to whatever you deposit. They give you the 100% bonus based on what you put in, and they kind of just give you a bonus as well. So again, that's mybookie.ag, the promo code RotoRadio. Congrats to Steve. And yeah, check out MyBookie. Sean, let me throw it back to you. I think you got the next question here.
Well, this one was mine, because this is my favorite. Every year on RotoViz, I write an article talking about how Alex Smith is going to break out. And there was no actual Alex Smith article this year, but that it's just sort of assumed, which is what I'm going to claim, since this year he actually is breaking out. So with the first 5 weeks and the Chiefs looking like the best team in football, Smith, you know, trying to make fans forget about Pat Mahomes, Ryan, can the Kansas City offense sustain something close to this level? And if it can, what does that mean for the specific, say, fantasy useful players?
So you had the reverse jinx with Smith and no article this year.
Right, exactly.
we can thank you for that. They've been such a fun team to watch, and that's not something we really get to say about Kansas City teams very often. It seems like even over the past few years when they have had some success, I wouldn't really call them fun even in those years. But with guys like Tyreek Hill and of course Kareem Hunt, it's a completely different offense, and Smith is of course excelling in that. I think he's the quarterback one through five games. Again, pending tonight's action, I don't think either of these guys in the Monday night game are going to catch him. So through five games, he's QB1 in fantasy, and nobody saw that coming, despite what you thought of Hill or Hunt or any of their other weapons. But I do expect them to continue this high level of play, and we have to start considering Smith as a quarterback one. Going forward, I think it's funny. We have a hard time accepting some of these changes that happen from year to year in fantasy football, even like a player like Smith, who we've grown accustomed to just being a middling quarterback two or even worse. to now treat him like a quarterback one, to put him in your starting lineup every week, sometimes is a little difficult. I'm actually remembering right now that I think I dropped him in one of our dynasty leagues. It might have been our hyperactive three league, Sean, but so obviously a bad mistake, but that's how he's being valued prior to the season.
Yeah, you know what you're saying there about kind of taking a little while to like react to the changes reminds me a little bit of Matt Ryan last year, because he'd always been kind of the guy that was kind of a lower ceiling guy. Like you knew that you weren't going to get some explosive, you know, quarterback one MVP type of season out of him, and then that's of course exactly what he did. So I think that, you know, I feel myself kind of feeling the same way with Smith, where it's like, is this guy, you know, really a QB one? And you know, can I just have Alex Smith on my team and that's all I need this year? It's kind of hard to wrap your mind around a little bit.
Yeah, that's one of the, I think one of the most difficult parts of playing Dynasty, especially at this, these early portions of the season like this, 4 or 5 weeks in, you have all this new information, all this new data. I'm a third grade teacher, and we talk about synthesizing and just how you change your mind as you gain new information. And that's really what we're doing at this point of the fantasy season, trying to decide, are these players for real? Is Kareem Hunt really this good? Should he be the running back one in Dynasty? Is Amari Cooper really this bad? Should we be trading him away before it's too late? Those are the types of questions that fantasy owners have to synthesize and have to adjust and react to.
Yeah, it makes it a really interesting time of year for Dynasty for sure. Another kind of premium dynasty asset I wanted to talk about is Derrick Henry. Henry was outtouched 18-4 by DeMarco Murray this last week. Murray may not even be completely healthy, so that was fairly surprising. When Henry flashes, he appears to be perhaps more of a product of Mariota in the offense, as opposed to reminding us of the other young stars from the last two classes. Do you see potential for bust status here with Henry? It doesn't seem like the shine has come off too much from where Henry was preseason. So he could be, you know, someone that you could sell before other owners are sort of starting to synthesize the information, the new information from this season, that, you know, he's probably not going to have the breakout that we were hoping for. If you do think owners should be selling, or at least if you're going to be shopping Henry around, what would you be looking to get back?
Yeah, I actually would be shopping Henry. We know about his body type, and that's not necessarily the makeup of a traditional fantasy football stud at the running back position. So I agree with your point regarding kind of a reliance on a Mariota offense, and though that's probably true of a lot of the top running backs across the league. We saw that one big game. Really, it was just one good half from Henry. I think that was in week two. Beyond that, he's basically been a non-factor. The coaches there have said they want to see a split, but like you said, 18-4 is not even close to a split. So that is a little concerning for Henry and for Henry owners. I would be shopping him, and I think you have to get at least a future first rounder. If you can add to it and get one of these rookie running backs, and maybe even go shopping for Dalvin Cook with his injury.
Ryan, before we let you go, I wanted to get into just a few college players. You're obviously, readers and fans are familiar with you in terms of your developmental rankings. And in the kitchen sink, your highest profile win in the developmental auction was Equanimeous St. Brown. Our college football expert Jordan Hoover has St. Brown in his top 10 for 2018, and I own him in the industry developmental dynasty league that has a bunch of great owners, is run by Wes Huber, and so obviously I'm rooting pretty strongly for him. But the Notre Dame passing offense has been very disappointing this year. It hasn't been a system in which the players can really put up those stats that, at least to a certain extent, they need in order to then be ready to declare for the draft and get drafted early enough to make them instant you know, fantasy relevant types of players when they make that jump. So with him only having 211 yards and two scores through 6 weeks, where does that place his value, and how do you see him compared to another sort of production light player like Deion Kane, you know, compared to, say, bigger stars like James Washington and Cortland Sutton?
Yeah, I was mentioning this the other day on Twitter. We all dynasty players like to look forward to that next rookie class, really before the current class has even stepped on the field. And if you're in a developmental league, Sean, like you are, and like I am as well, then you're doing that even more so and even more often. I've been pretty disappointed with this potential class of 2018. Saquon Barkley gets all the attention, as he should, and I think we can go ahead and lock him into being the top pick in rookie drafts. And Darius Geis, despite his injury troubles early this season, and maybe a little bit of disappointment, I think he's locked in probably as the number two pick. Beyond that, I'm really kind of disappointed. You mentioned St. Brown's struggles. That is probably quarterback related. They've had trouble replacing DeShone Kizer. I think Brandon Winbush is the starter there prior to his injury, and he just hasn't gotten it done. The entire Notre Dame offense has struggled. But the same really can be said about Cortland Sutton, about Deion Kane, as you mentioned, Calvin Ridley. Kind of a similar situation, not seeing the passing volume or the receiving volume, I guess. So just very few of those 2018 prospects are really improving their Devy dynasty stock or their NFL draft stock so far this season. A guy like Alden Tate from Florida State is a player that I had some concerns with, but he's taking advantage of some of the others' struggles and playing well, and I feel like he's gaining some value again, both in the NFL draft and in dynasty leagues.
Kane's a guy who, another player I own in the other league, and I was interested in following our auction that he did not go for hardly anything at all, and yet at the same time, following 2018 mock drafts, reality mocks, I can continue to see certain experts put him in even the top 10 or put him in that first tier of wide receivers. And he's a guy who, you know, will catch a 60-yard touchdown and then really won't be a factor in the game for multiple games in a row and then catch another 50-yard touchdown. Is it realistic to see him as a first-round pick in a reality setting? You know, are you getting the impression from the information that you're looking at, the people you talk to, that the fact that he played in many ways a similar role, or not necessarily a similar role within the offense, but often overshadowed at times even Mike Williams, is that kind of thing going to carry him up to where he could be a first round pick, or does he really need to start to produce?
I think he has to start to produce. The wide receiver class to me is interesting because prior to the season, fantasy owners at least were looking at Sutton and St. Brown as the standouts. Maybe you could even say in a tier to themselves. But I don't think that's the case anymore. You look at those two guys, Washington and Kane, of course, and Ridley and Christian Kirk from Texas A&M. It's hard to differentiate. It's hard to even rank those guys at this point, whether you're talking about fantasy football or potential NFL draft spots, because again, they have all almost all, I think Washington might be the exception, but beyond him, they just haven't lived up to the hype and the expectations this year. So, I mean, if we're projecting NFL draft right now, I'd say there might be one or two receivers in the first round, but I wouldn't expect Kane to be one of those.
That's kind of where I see it at this point as well, and I'm hoping certainly that those guys do start to flash a little bit, not only so you get the early declare so you don't have to sit with another season of owning those players, but also obviously you want that first round pick so they can come right in and not lose the value that they had when you spent the auction dollars of the draft pick on them originally. Well, Ryan, it's been great to have you. Everyone, I think, knows that you're one of my very favorite fantasy analysts, and it's been a blast being in the league. Ryan and I are working on some trades. I put David Johnson on the trade block just because I like to put whoever my most valuable players are, and especially in this case when he's potentially injured. So I have David Johnson and Christian McCaffrey on the block right now. And we're talking about, like, at that, I usually ask for half of Ryan's team. So those trades do tend to be declined, but it's been a blast in that. So Ryan, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to RotoViz Radio, the flagship RotoViz podcast. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the established RotoViz Radio feed. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter, @RotoVizRadio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/radio.